You are listening to the Mindful Marketing Show podcast, episode 52.
Welcome to the Mindful Marketing Show with Kimberly Maska. You are about to be empowered as we teach you the best marketing strategies used by today's spiritual entrepreneurs. Get ready to share your message and inspire people worldwide.
Hello, I am Kimberly Maska, your Mindful Marketer, and I would like to welcome you to the relaunch of the Mindful Marketing Show, the podcast for spiritual entrepreneurs who are ready to change the world with their gift and have a business that reflects their authentic self. To celebrate the relaunch, I have a free gift for you. It is the Jumpstart Your Spiritual Business Guide. In it, you will find all of the tools you need to, well, jumpstart your spiritual business and create an abundance of time, money, and freedom. Don't wait to share your gift with the world. Get your copy of Jumpstart Your Spiritual Business today at mindfulmarketingshow.com. Now, before we jump in, this episode is brought to you by Kickstart Cart, my shopping cart of choice for myself and my clients. It has everything you need to create the business of your dreams with passive income, or as I like to call it, making money while you meditate. Picking the right shopping cart for your business is a big deal, and it can be very confusing. So what I have done is created a free workshop for you to help you through the decision-making process. You can find this free shopping cart workshop at mindfulmarketingshow.com/kickstart. That is mindfulmarketingshow.com/kickstart. Now let's listen to this episode. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome. I'm Kimberly Maska, your host of Mindful Marketing, the podcast where today's mind, body, spirit leaders discuss the latest strategies to build your business and take the icky out of marketing. Joining us today is Clint Warren. Clint battled a lifetime of crippling drug addiction and limiting beliefs, which culminated in his arrest in 2011. Facing a critical juncture, he made a commitment to transform his life, and in doing so, watched everything around him transform as well. Since then, he's become a certified personal trainer, founder of Stacked Agency and Illuminate WP, business coach, author, speaker, and teacher. His mission is to add as much value wherever and however he can, sharing everything he's learned while changing his life and building his businesses. Clint, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Kimberly. Very grateful to be here. Hopefully I can add some value for your audience.
Oh, I'm sure you can. So now you had an interesting way of coming down this path. So I would love to hear and have you share your personal journey to coming down to your life's purpose.
Yeah, totally. I'll give you sort of the key bullet points. One of, the first most impactful moments was when I was 20 years old. I was in a situation where I was at a house party and a guy pulled out a gun and I trapped a bunch of my friends in this room. He was trying to rob everybody. And I made a decision to tackle him and get the gun away. And I got shot twice in the process. Wow. And I remember bleeding out, like laying on the ground, not to be graphic, but looking up at the sky and realizing this, there was no life before my eyes, anything like that. It was just kind of like, this is it, I'm toast. And up to that point in my life, I had nothing to show for it. I knew, I just had this moment where I'm like, this is it. I'm not leaving anything behind. Nobody's going to remember me. I haven't really added any value. And after that, I would love to say that I kind of like then grabbed life by the horns and made the most of every opportunity. But the reality is that for the majority of my adult life, I struggled, as you said, with this crippling drug and alcohol problem. So the worst, drugs imaginable, the worst ways to use them. I would say most of my 20s were characterized by overdoses, arrests, just a really, not a good path. And in 2011, I was arrested for trafficking marijuana, came as a result of a lot of the poor choices that I was making. And I just sort of sat, I remember sitting in jail and really facing this kind of critical juncture and saying I can go one of two ways from this point forward. I know which, what it looks like behind door number two, because I'd been there before. It's not a happy ending. And it was like each time I went to pick up the pieces, there was just less to pick up. And then option B was like, from this point forward, I do everything I can to move in a different direction. And it's funny looking back at that moment now and realizing like that was the biggest turning point of my life. And I can't explain what kind of like switched on in me at that moment, whether it was just that remaining shred of dignity or hope or pride. But I just made a commitment that I'm never going to put myself in a situation again where I've let people down and you know, go to bed at the end of the day and say, like, I didn't give my best effort, you know, because considering, like, I looked back at, like, kind of a lot of the experience of my life, I said, you know, maybe there's a reason I'm here. Maybe there's a reason, like, my heart didn't stop beating all those times that I overdosed or when I got shot and miraculously lived. So stop wasting it. And that was that's what I did. You know, I went to rehab, and that, you know, that was like the biggest limiting belief that was removed. And then I needed a way to make a living. So I was studying for my personal training certification. I got that. And then I also taught myself web design. And in working with people through personal training and web design, I started feeling like I was now a valuable person, you know, like I was actually adding value and just continued to invest in myself. I then, you know, eventually had to resolve my case by going to prison. But at that point, you know, I wrote a bit about this. I went in there stronger than I'd ever been mentally, physically, and spiritually and said, I'm going to come out even stronger. I'm not going to like, you know, just stagnate. So that's what I did. I got out, I put everything behind me, and I've, you know, had the pedal to the metal ever since. And I think that just the way this ties back is I do a lot of coaching. I do a lot of speaking. I've become much more public with my story and background because sometimes people ask me, like, why do you just put that out there? And I say, because everyone's made mistakes. Everyone may have been at some point, you know, it may not have been that extreme, but could possibly learn something from that. And I don't want people to feel ashamed like I did that they have issues with drugs or alcohol or that, you know, they're running into these tough junctures in their life. I want them to know that, look, you know, no matter what you're going through, there's a way out. You know, if you can find that sense of urgency, no matter what, you know, we're all here and we have this gift of life. You know, it's not something to be taken for granted. So I try now in producing content, writing, speaking, whatever I can do, you know, it makes me feel like I'm looking back. I want to know now that if I am in another situation where kind of like when I got shot, you know, I don't want to have to ask myself, like, am I leaving anything behind? I want to know that I made the most of this opportunity and that I've done everything I can every day to bring out the best of myself and help those around me. So that's a
beautiful story. I mean, to be able to overcome those issues and, like you said, with going in and coming out of jail stronger mentally, physically, spiritually, that's a ginormous task.
Yeah, you know what? Yes and no. Again, I'm sure a lot of people would agree with this. It's all about mindset. And initially I was like, oh, you know, I have to get this out of the way. But I looked at it as like, for me, this is a retreat. Like, I don't have to deal with bombardments by technology. Like, some people pay to go to ashrams and stuff. And I looked at it as like, you know what? This is my ashram. It was actually very refreshing. I could read books all day. I could write and reflect and just it reinforced to me that, like, no matter what environment I'm in, I have all the tools within me, you know, and I really don't need much materially to thrive. So.
That's such a fantastic perception. Prison was your ashram. I love it. It's true, right? We take vacations to be able to read and get away from it all. Yeah. You just made the best of what you had.
Exactly.
And I love that you were able to invest in yourself. I think that was a really key phrase I picked up you said earlier. It's like, it's really just, let's invest in me and figure out where to take it.
Yes, totally. And that's you know, been huge. I spend so much money and time just continuously investing in training and just helping build my skill set.
Yeah, because there's so many more people out there that know more than we do that can help us, and it's just incredible. So let's talk about then. So you started this as a business. So what was the challenges and the turning points of being able to, like, okay, so now I'm out, I have this amazing mindset. Now, how do I turn this into a business and become a business coach and internet marketing and all of that?
Well, to start was charging for it, you know, and It sounds funny, but like, I think one of the challenges that a lot of people face is that it's almost like, well, I want to give back. I want to do what I can to help people, and I'll just do everything I can. It will all come back to me. And then there's that missing step in there of like, they need to pay me. So in many ways, it was uncomfortable charging for it, because I think a lot of people at some point, you're going to be doing stuff for the first time. And I had to overcome that feeling of like, well, since I haven't done this before, this specifically, then I shouldn't charge for it. You know, I'll just sort of chalk it up to a learning experience. But my time is valuable. So, you know, the turning point was, number one, charging for it. Number two, really sort of structuring different packages and types of training. And then, you know, just starting to pick up clients. You know, so I it fit me pretty nicely, because I'd always been my whole life kind of the go-to guy for virtually all types of advice. And I always had an insatiable thirst for knowledge. I didn't realize it was unique until I've talked with a lot of people, and they're like, you read 4 books a week? And I'm like, yeah, doesn't everybody? Like, what do you do when you go home? Like, you know, I just realized, like, I heard the term consultant, but I didn't fully understand what that meant. And there's a really good book, talk about reading books, called The Trusted Advisor. And I realized that, you know, I was now sort of becoming a go-to resource, and it was starting to branch beyond web design. I had people come to me with all kinds of stuff. And I was just like, well, I'm just going to now charge them for my time, you know, and do it like that.
And that's so funny, because you're so right. It's like being able to charge. And I have a lot of clients that will be like, well, but it's a gift, because they feel they have a gift and they want to share that gift. I'm like, but it's still your time.
Yes.
So
cute. Now, and to that point, because I totally get that. You know, I want to help people as much as possible. Now, to that, I will say there are plenty of times where I will keep small blocks and do sort of my donations to the community. So I have some people that come that maybe can't afford my services or some of my courses, and I'll do scholarships. I had a woman recently who I just launched a new product. It's called the Six-Figure Freelancer. And it's $649 for the course. And I reached out to a woman who I, you know, she'd been a bunch of my speaking engagements. I knew it was going to be a good fit for her. And she said, you know, at the moment, my husband just got laid off. And I was like, well, come to the course. You know, it's just please. I know it will benefit you. So enjoy it. That being said, you know, you can still find a balance. Like, there's nothing wrong with charging. And to that, I also say, by charging, you're actually doing more of a service to your clients. And I'll explain that, because, like, okay, let's say you are you're creating a course or some sort of product or service. If you give it away for free, people don't value it as much. And I'll give you an example. I have several mastermind groups, and we all exchange logins and passwords for these multi-$1,000 online marketing courses, right? So since they're free to me, I don't really spend the time to then go through the program, right? But I have other courses that I've bought for $2,000. I bought a Jordan Belfort's straight line sales course. And because I had invested that money, I was now more motivated to do it. If someone's paying a trainer or a coach $300 an hour, you better believe they're going to follow their advice, versus someone who's just saying, you know, here, let me just give you some free advice on a forum. So that's one of my, you know, again, it's just about shifting your mindset.
I couldn't agree more. We value what we pay for.
Yep.
My little psychology of the human mind.
yeah, totally.
So now I have to jump back to something you said earlier, because I'm just fascinated. Yep. So 4 books a week. I'm working on one. My goal is to do one a week. I'm about like one every 2 weeks. So yep. I'm going to take a wild guess. You don't own a television.
No, absolutely not.
And so that's so funny, because I have a little teeny tiny one, but everybody walks into my house and they go, where is, and it's in the bedroom, because it's, I have it in case I like get sick and I can't do anything. But I'm like, everyone walks in and they're like, you don't have a TV? I'm like, no.
No, totally not.
I love it. So what are one of your favorite books? I was going to ask this question later, but we're here now. So what are some of the books that have really been transformational for you?
Yeah, The Alchemist is probably one of my all-time favorites. Think of some Unbeatable Mind is a really good one I read recently. It's by Mark Divine, Navy SEAL commander, former Navy SEAL commander. The Magic of Believing, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, obviously. Yeah. I try to mix them up. You know, I alternate between like business books and things like that. Try to think of some other ones. The Alchemist is like my all-time favorite. Yeah. The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari by Robin Sharma. I love Robin Sharma's books. The Leader Without a Title.
That's great.
Could go on.
I know, right? And that's the thing where it's like, oh, and I just read this one and that one. It's so hard.
Yeah, totally.
I love it. But I love getting new. I have not read or heard of The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, and I think that's hilarious.
My God.
And I know someone who would love that title.
Amazing. It is amazing. It's, you know, and again, I think it ties nicely into this concept of like, you can have an abundant life. There's nothing wrong. Like, there's nothing, I don't want to say like noble about like, you know, being the most amazing instructor in the world and just like being broke. You know, I know some people would be like, well, you know, I'm helping so many people. Like, money gives you the opportunity to do that at scale. So that if you are this amazing mind body coach, by having more money, you can create better products. Like, you can now create courses without professional crew and everything and spend more money on ads to reach more people. There's nothing wrong with, you know, having an abundant life and having a lot of, you know, money and success. Like, I love Jordan Belfort's quote. He says, there's no amount of poverty or unhappiness that you can spread around and like make someone else smile, you know? And it's true. It's like, you know, I don't necessarily want a lot of material stuff, but I would love to be able to be very financially successful so that I can donate money to charity, so that I can buy the homeless guy outside my office breakfast every morning, so that I could help family members and those in need.
Yep. So being able to touch more lives is what we're here for. So let's touch upon a little marketing stuff and a little business stuff. So, you know, this podcast is directed towards the mind, body, spirit entrepreneurs. And what do you think is the greatest challenge that they face in marketing and building their business?
Okay. The biggest thing is that it's going to take effort on the part of their customers. And that can be challenging. You know, I worked as a personal trainer for quite some time, and you know, it can be challenging and frustrating. I thought every client I took was going to be the next Biggest Loser. And I realized pretty quickly that, you know, not everyone is cut out for that, you know? So it's going to take effort on the part of the customer. Like, with my web design agency, clients will come to me because they just want to pay me and I'll build their website and develop their online marketing strategy. So they just want to hand it off. They don't want to do anything. And it's totally different when it, you know, becomes like mind, body, and spirit, and the end client like also has to take some action on their part. So that's one challenge to begin with. The other thing is that sometimes it's difficult for the customer to understand fully the benefits, you know, because they're not like tangible, and you can't necessarily promise stuff. You can show case studies and results and things like that. But you know, a lot of times it's not like very tangible stuff, you know?
That's so true. You can't be like, oh, and here you're going to get this at the end. It's so unique.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, we covered the piece on you feel uncomfortable charging. But you know, the other thing too is just, it's, I don't know. Look, any type of marketing can be uncomfortable in a certain way, because I think with mind, body, spirit, especially, I know for myself, like, I want to do things with like a sense of humility, and marketing at times I feel like can kind of contradict that. You know, it can be awkward talking about yourself, touting your success and the success of your clients. So how do you find that delicate balance between the two? That's certainly a challenge I know a lot of people face. It's like, how do I go out and talk about myself and pretty much tell how great I am and how great it would be to work with me, but do so in a way that doesn't make me seem like an obnoxious jerk?
Really is a fine line. And then that's why, for me, it comes down to the language. So when, yes, you know, when I'm helping my clients write their sales letters and their websites and stuff, it's like, it's about how you say it.
Yes.
But it's still tough. It's a fine line. It's definitely, yeah, a fine line.
Yep.
So what marketing strategies work for you in reaching your ideal client?
Yes. So, okay. So my ideal client generally is a, I'm going to refrain from using this line because I made this mistake before. It's a 40 to 65 year old female entrepreneur. I had at one point used the term middle-aged at a female networking group, and I got like, I was almost kicked out of the room.
Age thrown at you?
Yeah. Yeah. And I made that determination just by looking at the data. You know, I looked back at all of my previous clients. I was like, there is definitely a pattern and trend here. Okay. So based on that, you know, my marketing strategies work best for me. Speaking engagements, hands down. So I have the female networking group speaking circuit totally locked down. I spoke in September 21 times. Like,
wow.
On some days there were like two speaking engagements. I had one where I had like, I was on two in one building on the same night where I was doing one talk and I ran to the other side of the building to do the other and then ran back. But I do very targeted outreach. Now, I'll just sort of run quickly through my process. The first thing that I do is find topics of interest. The key word here is interest. I've put together talks before that I thought were fascinating, but lo and behold, you know, I didn't do the research ahead of time. And I do that by like just interviewing clients. I ask them, you know, what are your biggest problems right now, your pains or frustrations? So, for example, one topic that came out of that was a lot of business owners are like, I don't even know where to start when it comes to online marketing. So I was like, all right, bam. So I did a talk called Online Marketing Demystified. And I did that talk like 25 times this year. Rotary clubs, Kiwanis clubs, local libraries, female networking groups, other like chamber of commerce type stuff all over. And what I then do is I write about it, you know, so I blog and I create well-optimized blog posts. So that draws a considerable amount of traffic as well. And so quickly back to the speaking engagement piece. So what I do is like, it's very targeted outreach. You know, what I realize is that a lot of times these groups are looking for speakers. So I find who runs it and I just reach out and I say, hey, here's all the other topics I've spoken about. Here's how it would benefit your audience. I'm not doing this to solicit business. And I'm really not. You know, I think kind of like, you know, the uncomfortableness of marketing, I'm not marketing myself. I do all of this with the intention of providing as much value as possible for them. I even tell them a lot of times now I'll talk and I'll be like, I can't take any new business right now for the most part, but here is all the information you need and some bonus resources to help you. And so I reach out, you know, and when you rock it out, like my goal when I speak is for that to be the best 45 minutes of those people's lives. And it's like, it sounds like, you know, wow, that's a lofty goal, but it's like, hey, if someone's giving me their time, they can never have that back. I would never take that for granted. I usually have rehearsed, usually like a 6-to-1 ratio. So if I'm doing a 45-minute talk, I have rehearsed that for like 6 hours and really like timed it out, you know, trimmed it down and made it perfect. So the other thing that I do is I will, to anyone listening, if you want to steal this, just make sure to call it the Clint. So I was speaking, you know, for a while, and I didn't have an email list. And yeah, I know. And I met with a mentor of mine. His name's Michael Fishman. And he was like, how big's your list? And I was like, oh, my what? And it's like, you have to build a list. And I was like, okay. So then when I would speak, I had this clipboard and I was like, if anyone would like to sign up for my newsletter, you know, put your email address here. And I get back to like 3 people who signed up. So then I invented what I will call the Clint. As far as I know, I invented it. What I started doing is when I would start talking, I'd say, before anyone asks, I'm never doing this talk again. These slides are not available anywhere online. The only way you can get a copy is print your email address clearly on this clipboard, and you'll get a copy tomorrow and some bonus resources. So right away, everyone now, suddenly their penmanship got so much better and everyone would sign up for the list. And so now I've built like thousands of people in person just through speaking engagements. And now they're on my email list and I send them new tips each week. I sent out a newsletter a couple days ago just about this, like some meditation and tips on that stuff. So that's how I maintain the contact. And just because of that, then, you know, people have been on my list for like years for whatever reason. Suddenly, you know, they'll reach out and be like, oh, by the way, you know, my brother-in-law is starting a new business. He needs some guidance and consulting. So.
Fantastic. That's the way to do it. Now, I'll even throw in that there's the ability, and I have this with some of my clients where I can give them the ability to have people text in their information.
So that's awesome.
Right. So it's just, you know, text, it would be like, my thing is like for this podcast is mindful. I say text mindful to 58885 to get like more information. And then you don't even need a piece of paper and it's just done.
That's awesome. We'll call that the Kimberly.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about social media, since this is your arena. So what do you find is working fantastically right now? What's changing? What isn't working? What kind of advice can you give?
It's funny that you ask this because I actually don't use social media.
You don't use? Are you serious?
Yes, I'm totally serious. I know. A lot of our clients, I'm trying to think of some recent projects we've worked on. Yeah, for me personally, I used virtually no social media. And it sounds crazy to say, but we just found that it didn't deliver a big return on investment. That's not to say that if I had used it very aggressively, maybe I would be 10 times, you know, more successful now. But I found that for me, it just became a distraction. It was very tough for me to use it in a very structured way. That being said, for some clients, if they're business to business, we have had some success when we're promoting new content to do so through like LinkedIn groups. So, and the advice that we do some high level social media strategy for our clients, but not necessarily the implementation. And our advice is always start and focus on a couple channels tops. We always say like start with one, but make sure that you're focusing on the right channels. So if your target market is like a 45-year-old high income male, he's not going to be spending time on Pinterest. So, you know, I have some people that come to me and they're like, you know, I just signed up for all my social media accounts. We have our Pinterest going on, you know, our Instagram. And I'm like, well, who's your target customer? And like, you know, it's blah, 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 blah. I'm like, well, that person's not spending time on Pinterest. Just like I had a woman who runs a bikini startup boutique. And, you know, she's like, well, I have my LinkedIn set up. And I'm like, look, I was like, you should be on Pinterest because your target market is all visual. It's female. And that's where they're going to be hanging out. So I would say my advice would be start with a couple channels, but make sure that those channels are what your customers are using. And make absolutely sure that you can I recommend Sprout Social for some of their metrics. Because you want to really make sure that you're getting a return on your investment. And sometimes that's difficult to quantify with social media.
Absolutely. Yes. I can't stress that enough. Know what you're putting out and what you're getting back in. So.
Totally.
Absolutely. Okay. So since you don't use social media, which frankly, I kind of love that answer because it's you know, I would say it's like the thorn in the side. It's the big gorilla you know you need to use. And you're like, I don't want to. And,
it's funny because like I have a strategist that I'm working with now. And, you know, my goal is to really kind of within a year or so be doing 1,000-person-plus workshops and be on stage speaking and really scale up my business. And she's like, you have to be on social media, this and that. My impression of social media, just because this is sort of how I view it, is imagine like a giant room. You know, it's like me cracking open a door and I peek my head into this giant room with a bunch of like noisy, obnoxious people shouting at each other. What's up? You know? And I don't know, maybe it's just the way my brain works. I just, I have a hard time, you know, my brain starts to get very pulled off track when I'm bombarded with so much information. I'm trying to get there. Yeah. But.
And it's a lot of work too. And so I'll throw this out. I have a new software that I'm using now called Edgar, which is pretty phenomenal, but they help with the social media headache. And what they do is they, since, you know, especially like on Facebook, right, only like 10% of your people actually see what you post. So they actually create like a system so that you have a library of all of your stuff, and they automatically post and repost. So you take time to build your library up front, and then it kind of runs for you. And that's amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, two things that I'm exploring now, because I'm very like systematized, like everything has to follow a system. And I think that's part of what scares me about social media, is that the way I used it is like, oh my God, like I can't do things randomly. So there's a couple things that were recommended to me. One is called Tweetly. And basically what that does with Twitter is it will just randomly tweet one of your posts and do so at regular intervals. So it will just continuously push your content in front of people. And then what I'm going to start doing is using Hootsuite, which I'm sure quite a few people know, but using that to every Sunday evening schedule out all my social media releases across all channels for the week. So I then don't have to touch it. You know, I can go in and like direct occasionally, but
I know. So since you're not on social media and you are an internet marketing expert, what kind of internet marketing tips can you give?
Yeah. So we focus primarily on content marketing. And the first biggest, most critical thing is like, know your audience. definitely, if you don't have what we call a customer avatar and a good understanding of who you're trying to target, do it immediately. Like, stop listening to this or listen to the rest of this interview and then create that customer avatar. And when we sit with business owners, you know, the first thing they're like, oh, you know, it varies so much. We have such a wide range of people. And I always say, I'm like, all right, pull out a list of your past 20 clients, and 9.9 times out of 10, it doesn't vary that much. And based on that, you know, you then want to identify what blogs are they reading, what type of content are they reading, what channels are they interacting in, like social media channels, and then start to produce content and build an email list. And that's those are some of the biggest things. So one of the tools that we love is called Buzz, B-U-Z-Z, Sumo, S-U-M-O. And what you can do is look up, you know, take your top five competitors who have a really good blogging strategy, and you can put in their domains, and you can see historically what types of content have generated the most interest online through social signals, like how many people are sharing it, stuff like that. So that's typically where we start. So let's say you are a local yoga instructor, and I look at your top five, you know, they could be national examples. And we look at BuzzSumo, and okay, we see that the top performing piece like ever is a blog article called like the, you know, best yoga routine for busy moms. Okay. And we know that your target market is sort of these 46-year-old women. We know that if we repurpose a piece of content like that, historically, it's going to do very well. It will draw traffic and generate interest, right? So we then use that to create this kind of editorial calendar and publish well-optimized blog posts. And then once the other mistake that people make is they fall victim to this what's called publish and pray approach, where it's like, oh, I published
that.
Publish this post, like where's the floodgates of traffic? And it's like, well, it's lost in the abyss of the internet. You know, even if it's well optimized, you know, I have some people who are like, well, I optimized it for search. And I'm like, yeah, but you know, maybe 10 to 15 people will find that a month. The next thing that you have to do is we then promote it through various channels. So that could include social bookmarking sites like reddit.com. I have some blog posts from my old site that still generate, you know, 5 to 10 project requests every month from all over the country because I promoted stuff through Reddit. So social bookmarking sites, promote it through different social media channels. So your goal here when you're publishing content is to get it in front of as many people as possible, as many qualified people as possible. The more the merrier, but in the end, we're looking for qualified visits. And then after that, you know, you then have to have a system to capture them, because people will land on your blog, They'll read your stuff. I mean, how many blogs have you read that you can't even remember the name of, but it was like a good article,
right?
And you never came back. So the next thing is you have to have a way to convert that person. Now, the way that we typically do that is we create some sort of what's called a lead magnet. And you've seen those before. They're like that ebook, or like, you know, sign up here for a five-part video course. Or it doesn't have to be anything fancy. I have an ebook on my site. It's called Unlocking Your True Potential. I went to Fiverr.com, Fiverr.com. I paid someone in the Indonesia $5 to create a cool 3D book cover. And then I wrote this. It was like a 50-page, you know, it doesn't even have to be that long, but I got kind of crazy with it, a 50-page ebook. And it's just like in Google Docs saved to as a PDF, right? So in that way, I capture their email. And then now they can keep coming back. Now you retain them, because marketing now is like online marketing. It's about building trust. And the way that you do that is you provide value, you get them to your site, and then you continue building that relationship. So people know, like some people are taken aback. Like they've been on my email list. Like you just send out all this valuable information like for free. And I'm like, yeah. Because then if you know you can trust me, because I love the quote by Ramit Sethi. He says, your free content should be better than anyone else's paid content, and your paid content should be the best ever created.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that in a nutshell, you know, I would say, you know, the whole big picture, just to run it down, you know, understand your audience, understand what kind of topics they're interested in, use that to create an editorial calendar. If you don't have the time to write, there's a great service called ghostblogwriters.com. They'll write it for you. Put out the content. Promote the content. That's where social media kind of comes into play. And then have something to then capture them. And then, last but not least, don't make the mistake of you get people on your email list and then you don't use it. Like, last thing, you know, you've probably seen this too, where you sign up for this email list. And, you know, you're excited, like you've given the person permission to communicate with you. And that's a very intimate relationship. You know, I don't check a ton of social media, but nobody, you know, doesn't check their email at least once a day. So, but then like 3 months later, I get this random email. I'm like, wait, who is this?
You know, you're like, what?
Yeah. But if that's someone who's just adding value week after week, then, you know, that's an effective use of an email list.
Absolutely. Communication. I love the trust. And I couldn't have said everything you said even better. And I love, especially, well, hone in on the avatar at the beginning, because the thing I always hear is like, well, but it can help everyone.
It's like, yeah.
I understand that. And I'm sure it could, but I can't market to everybody.
Yeah, totally. And you know what? That was a big thing for me. My startup, my side project, Illuminate WP, we teach WordPress training workshops. And initially I was like, you know, before I fully understood marketing, I was like, this is for everybody. You know, this is amazing. You know, everyone can take this. And what you have to understand is that when you are marketing effectively, you're going to risk, and you have to be cool with this, alienating quite a few people. That's okay. However, the remaining people, if you have your copyright, are going to convert at a very high rate because you're speaking directly to that person. The worst mistake that you can make is, you know, being way too general and broad and trying to appeal to everybody. I'm a classic example of that. I made that mistake very early on and lost quite a bit of money because of that.
Right. Specific is key. So now, looking back on your journey, and if you have to do it all over again, what would you do differently?
Document procedures.
Ah, oh, I love it.
Yeah. So when I started my agency, I did so with my friend and mentor, Brian Castle. And he's since moved on to focus on his startup, Restaurant Engine. And the biggest mistake, I mean, he was just, he had procedures to document procedures. And I was like, this is ridiculous. But, you know, the importance can't be understated, because to scale your business, I heard a great quote. someone said to me, Clint, being a perfectionist and a control freak is not conducive to scaling a business. And I was like,
so true.
You're right. It's like, however, I'm going to continue micromanaging this project. The importance like can't be understated. And what I mean by that is what I do now is I have a massive spreadsheet, and it's all the internal stuff in my business down to like paying contractor invoices, because as soon as possible, like right away, you should be documenting everything that you do and then create documentation for that and building the manual for your business so that you can begin scaling and hiring, whether it's a virtual assistant. I now have several virtual assistants who carry out a lot of day-to-day stuff in my business so I can focus on the stuff that's going to move it forward. And that's, you know, focusing on the business instead of in the business. And probably the best book to talk about that is called The E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber. And it's just, it's so critical, because I spent, you know, several years freelancing, and there's so much stuff where I was like, oh, this is like such grunt work. And it's like, yeah, but you know, I would run into that thing where it's like, it would take me three times as long to explain to someone how to do this versus do it myself. So every time I would just do it myself. Yep. But the benefit of documentation is like, then you never have to do it again. Yes, it's a bit of a pain in the butt to do it that first time, but then you don't have to do it again. Then you can scale up.
Yeah.
So.
And I, you know, and I'll say this, because I'm a huge proponent of standard operating procedures, which sounds so ugly that way, but it just, it is what it is. But, and what I'll do is I'll start to, when I, anytime I go to do something, I'm always like, oh, I got to like write it out. It's just kind of like what I do. I have a technology background. So yes. You write out what you do.
Yep.
And so I will tell my people, like, I use Evernote to start it. Because you may not have time at that moment to sit and write it all out, but you know your basic steps. So I throw it in Evernote, so it's there. And then I go back to it. And then I, what I'll do is I'll kind of run through it, add it more. I'll give it to my virtual assistant, let her write it up.
And then we're good. That, you know, it's funny that you say that, because my pro tip, I do the exact same thing. I have a recurring event every Sunday. I've thought about changing the day I do this on, because it is kind of a drag on Sunday afternoon. I make sure to add any – I have a tab on my spreadsheet called Unfiled New Procedures. And I think back throughout the week, like, is there anything that are new procedures that I need to add? And then during the week, like on Wednesday morning, I'll just create the broad bullet points for those procedures. And then what I'll do – what I've been doing now for most of them is I create like a 5 to 10 minute screencast of me walking through with my mouse on the screen, and then I hand it off to my virtual assistant and have them transcribe it, and then I just make the edits.
Nice. That's
kind of like outsourcing the, you know, procedure stuff, and then I can, you know, hand that off to them and they can carry out the procedures.
There you go. That's it. And that's the only way. It's truly the only way you can grow. Otherwise you're stuck with just you.
Totally.
So where do you see yourself going from here? What are the next steps for you in building your platform?
Okay. So I, you know, I'm very much a proponent of like visualization and everything. I would ideally within a year or so, I don't want to say like be the next Tony Robbins, but I can't think of a better way to kind of articulate. I just kind of see myself standing on stage and just scaling up, you know, my learning, being able to pass on a lot of information and systems that I've pieced together, that I've been very blessed and fortunate, you know, whether it's a combination of things that I've learned intermixed with my experience to be able to work with people and just help them. And for me, what I truthfully work for is I have a giant cork board in my office of thank you notes. And at the end of the day, like that means more to me than any kind of like material success, like getting a handwritten thank you note from someone that says like, I can't thank you enough. You know, I've applied what you taught me and here are the results that have resulted from that. So over the next year, you know, I have the broad vision of standing on stage in front of a lot of people. But you know, visualization is nothing unless you map out the strategy to get there. So it's like, you know, reaching out to places to speak, putting together different presentations, creating a speaker sheet, you know. And one of the big things that has been really critical for me is every night before I go to bed, I write down for the next day on a post-it note 3 to 5 big things that are going to move me closer to my dreams. And the first thing I do the next day, I don't have email on my phone. I, intentionally insulate myself from a lot of noise and distractions, the first 3 to 4 hours of the next day, I do those things. I work through them in sequential order, and they are sort of high priority things that are going to move me closer to that vision. And I work through that before I kind of like move into reactionary mode and start handling other people's agendas.
That's great advice. I love that.
Yeah. And the reason you use a post-it is, you know, another good book I'll mention is called The One Thing. And the reason you use a post-it is because as you're writing that list, you can't fit a lot on a post-it, you know? So it's like, what I ask myself when I'm making that list is like, if I got nothing else done tomorrow except this stuff, is that cool? And if the answer is yes, that's my list. You know, this is like the really the stuff that's going to move me forward.
Yep. So. I love it. I know. I think Jack Canfield talks about that too. And it's just, it's very, very powerful to do that and sit the night before, plan out your day. And I personally don't look at email for a few hours either because no one else's emergency is my emergency.
No. Yeah. You know, there's a great program too I've been using. It's called Inbox Pause for Gmail. And I've been a proponent of this for a while. Of doing batch processing email. So I check email from 11:30 to 12:15 and then like 3:30 to 4 and then 5:30. And what it does, it will like hide and hold all of your emails in a queue and then batch deliver it at one time.
I like it.
So like, you know, people are like, I sent it to you and I'm like, Mom, I can't see it. You know, I'll check it at 11:30. Like,
literally, what? I can't see
like,
it.
Just check it on your phone. I'm like, I don't have email on my phone. Like, I'll talk to you later.
I like the no email on your phone.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Because, you know, my thought with that is like, again, look, I don't wish that anyone goes to prison, but like being in prison, it was just so nice to be so mindful and present. Like you're sitting there, you realize like, I don't need to be constantly like have that stimulation of constantly checking incoming correspondence. Like I can all wait. And when I got out, I was like, I want to intentionally recreate some pieces of that, you know, were sort of helped clear my mind. You know, you're talking with people that are not constantly checking their phone and not taking email off my phone. Cause like when I'm out and about, I don't even need to know about it. Cause I can't do anything about it right then and there. The worst thing that you can do is like, you know, be spending time rereading and revisiting emails. Like I have a rule too with my email called touch it once. So like I only, when I'm checking my email, I make sure that I have time to handle it right then and there. I don't like open it and be like, oh God, I'll deal with this later. Like, you know, revisit it. Cause then I have to reread it and, you know, get back in that state of mind. So I make sure that those time blocks when I am checking email, I'm in front of a computer and I can effectively do something with it to get it out of my inbox right then and there.
That's fantastic. Fantastic advice. Well, you have given us like an incredible amount of information. I love it. Thank you so much for your time and really the knowledge you've passed on has been really amazing. So if my listeners wanted to find you and find out more about you and what you do, where would they go?
Yes, they can go to my website, Clint, C-L-I-N-T, Warren, W-A-R-R-E-N.com. And if they go to clintwarren.com/book, B-O-O-K. They can download a free copy of my book, Unlocking Your True Potential. And it's basically a compilation of all these techniques and strategies that I use on a day-to-day basis. People ask me a lot, like, how do you, you know, create this amazing life and all this stuff in such a short period of time? And it's like, well, there's a lot of timeless stuff. I just kind of compiled it and synthesized it. So that is my gift to your listeners. I hope they can get something out of that.
Fantastic. Well, again, thank you so much for your time. And I'll remind my listeners, they can go to the mindfulmarketingshow.com to get more information and read more about Clint. And your links will be there as well. So thank you again for your time.
Thank you, Kimberly. My pleasure.
You have been listening to The Mindful Marketing Show with me, your host, Kimberly Maska. You can get more information about this episode and all of my episodes at mindfulmarketingshow.com. There you will find all of the show notes and links to the books and business resources we discussed. Again, that's mindfulmarketingshow.com. Until next time, be passionate, be inspired, and live your dream. Have a beautiful day.